This is DJ Pulga for a special segment for Radio Autonomía. Joining me today are Miss R and Rachel, two organizers in the recent campaign victory for the Victims Compensation Program in California. Can you please describe what the California Victim Compensation Program is?
Yeah, hi, this is Rachel. I'm with the U.S. Prostitutes Collective. And the program, California Victim Compensation Program, it's supposed to provide compensation to victims of violent crime. Things like domestic violence, sexual or physical assault, homicide, that kind of thing. And it's supposed to cover medical, income loss, funeral expenses, relocation, that kind of. And then there's eligibility requirements to be able to get compensation. Like one problematic one is that you have to cooperate with, we see as problematic, is that you have to cooperate with the police, and a lot of people have a problem with that. And the program, we found out in the course of our organizing, isn't government funded. In fact, most of the money that goes into the program comes from, and we found this out from prisoner rights groups who we worked with, it comes from, and the money is extracted from prisoners who may be inside for nonviolent offenses, like including crimes of poverty, and it's prisoners who pay into a fund that then funds the compensation program, and that is called restitution. And if you've been convicted of a violent crime, you have to pay restitution into this fund, and that's how the Victim Compensation Fund.
Actually, it's not only violent crimes, just to add to that, or prisoners. It's fines that are placed on criminals in general, including things like DUIs. The money goes to Victim Compensation Program from those fines as well.
And can you talk a little bit about what led to wanting to do some type of reform to the California's Victim Compensation Program? What was the issue at hand?
This is Ms. R, and I'm kind of the one who started it because I was violently assaulted. I was injured. I went to the hospital, and I actually cooperated with the police in their investigation, and I applied for the Victims Compensation Program thinking that it was just a program that it's kind of bureaucratic, just assuming maybe I would get something from it or there would be paperwork involved. And there was. It was a denial that I got from them, saying that because of a regulation that they had, 649.56, it was involvement in the events leading to the qualifying crime of prostitution. So they were kind of saying that, like, that I was involved in a crime and that my crime superseded the crime of violence that happened to me. And I basically wanted to fight that. I felt like that was really wrong, that kind of law could even exist. And so I started researching simply on Google. I started seeking support around my community. And I found some supportive individuals, both Rachel West of the U.S. Prostitutes Collective, who I'm here with, and also Maxine Dugan from the Erotic Service Providers Union, were really supportive and helped me keep going on my research and helped me create this whole campaign. They just jumped on board and started giving me support. While I was searching through Google, I found that 649.56 was actually on their website at the Victim Compensation Board, and that they were going to be doing some administrative stuff with that regulation, which was interesting. It was to create an exemption for human trafficked victims who were applying for victims compensation to be able to get funds and to not have this regulation applied to their specific group. And I kind of thought potentially there could be a segue into being able to get them to look more closely at that law and realize how discriminatory it really was. And that's when both Maxine and Rachel kind of helped me with some of those processes and helped create the campaign. That's when we mobilized and went to the hearing in Sacramento.
Yeah, so you mentioned there's a kind of discriminatory regulation around it. Who exactly are, who are the people that this regulation is excluding?
It's hard to say for sure, because the regulation actually accuses you of a crime that you haven't committed by way of using the police report to determine your eligibility. So essentially, like, I didn't go to them and tell them I was a prostitute. I've never been arrested for prostitution. It's not, like, really part of my identity. But by way of giving complete information to the police within the police report, there was enough information there for them to assume I was a prostitute. Based on things they've recently printed, it sounds like they start to assume someone is a prostitute if, like, the rape happened in a car, for example. So for that particular regulation, the kinds of people that get excluded are potentially like a broad segment of people that they've judged to be unworthy and kind of like asking for their own rape is how I saw that.
Mm.
So it's, anyway, they assume to be a sex worker.
Right. So it's essentially up to the discretion of the police officer.
Right. And then the people making the judgment in the local office, usually the DA's office where the victim compensation program is based, look at the police report and then they make a determination and send it to the Sacramento group. And then, you know, they usually rubber stamp it and back up the denial. Or did in the past.
It's mostly just a bureaucratic process.
Right. But through that bureaucracy, a lot of things are determined through, you know, whatever an individual in that process may, you know, decide, oh, well, in my mind, this equates prostitution or this equates some kind of crime outside of the crime that's being reported in of itself, right?
Exactly.
So in your process of organizing to change this regulation that excludes, that has, or at one point excluded sex workers and also formerly incarcerated people and or people with felonies, what were some of the challenges that you were faced with as you began organizing around this campaign?
Okay, well, one of the challenges was that, you know, this was a little known regulation, and really it was on us to bring it to the public, to the sex workers, and also the wider public, and make our case, you know, in a way that people would rally to support us about the injustice, you know, why it was unjust, why we thought it, why it discriminated against people. And, you know, we were a group when we started this off, we were a grassroots sex worker-led groups. We had few resources, and basically we had to build a campaign and build support in California, you know, to build support and also public support and also convince high-level politicians on the Victim Compensation Board that this regulation needed to be needed to be scrapped because it was a discriminatory regulation. The other challenges we faced were, you know, just organizing ourselves as a group. We had to find times to meet with people's busy schedules, meet together and plan. We set up a working group and, you know, basically had to get the word out to the various networks we had and contacts we had and spread the word out, you know, among people in California about the regulation and why we believed it needed to be removed completely. Another challenge was that, you know, that sex workers, particularly sex workers who've been denied compensation, but in general, can't speak out publicly. It's very hard for sex workers to come forward and speak out and say, I was denied, because, you know, then you face arrest, you face prosecution. Because sex work is criminalized, it's harder for women to come forward. It's harder for immigrant women, undocumented women to come forward. And you know, fear of arrest and deportation really prevent people from coming forward. So that's a big challenge we faced in organizing.
And how were you able to kind of circumvent those some of those challenges?
All kinds of ways. You know, people wrote statements that we read out at the various hearings. We used the press to get the word out because, you know, that then you reach thousands of people. If you get a press, if you get the press to pick up on it. So we, you know, we found creative ways to allow for sex workers' voices to be heard. And we, you know, we reached out to other discriminated groups. And in the process found out, as you said, that formerly incarcerated people on felony probation or parole are also excluded under a different regulation, 649.4B, which denies them compensation for rape. So we, you know, it included that into our campaign, that different regulation, also calling for that to be scrapped because it's also discriminatory.
Did you notice through this, for example, you mentioned while you were doing research and organizing around the exclusion of sex workers, you found out that folks who were formerly incarcerated were also excluded. Through this process, who were some of the groups and people involved in supporting this change that, you know, may at first glance one would think, why would this person, this group, or these individuals be part of this kind of campaign?
Yeah, well, we reached out pretty widely in California, and you know, we were thrilled that we got such a response almost immediately when we sent, you know, emails out to quite a wide spectrum of groups, as I said, and we did it at the first round in preparation for a board meeting, and we issued the, you know, we had two paragraphs asking for support for the regulations to be scrapped. And I think it was in like 24 hours, we got 13 groups in the first round.
Wow.
And then, you know, as the campaign grew, all kinds of people sent in their endorsements. It was really fantastic. We got the church, like victims' rights organizations, women's groups, veterans groups, LGBT organizations, civil liberties, prisoner rights groups. You know, it was a, it was broad-based support, and throughout California, LA, Santa Cruz, Northern California, Orange County. You know, we really got fantastic support, and that, you know, was very, really helped win the final repeal of the regulation, because people, you know, were ready. They didn't think sex workers should be discriminated against in this way. And, you know, they thought rape is rape and violence is violence, and people should, shouldn't be denied compensation when they've been victims.
And roughly how long did this campaign last for?
10 months.
Wow.
It was a 10-month campaign. And, you know, very, very active throughout.
A year, really, if you count the from the time I got my denial letter to the time we got the law repealed, it was 12 months' time.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Now, all the while Rachel and Maxine were doing outreach to get these other groups involved, I got to give them a lot of credit for standing by me and giving me personal support and allowing my actual real voice to be included. Like, without that personal support, I probably would have given up my efforts. And but sometimes there was like a real, like, it was just grueling and I wanted to quit. And so, like, having people there that were really physically there to support me, who I could like call them and they'd be like there to talk to me, or, you know, make a plan with me for what's next.
Right. Yeah.
And that practical, like, tangible help was really meaningful.
Right. At one of the press conferences that you all had, there was a young woman who spoke out about her experience going through the bureaucracy of the California's Victim Comp program. And she said, you know, that she hadn't, you know, she was not a sex worker, but was in solidarity with this campaign. But in her experience, it was so difficult and somewhat re-traumatizing of her experience as a victim or survivor of sexual assault, going through the California's Victims Comp program.
Absolutely. And, you know, so many people are, don't even apply because, you know, they, well, one of the stipulations is you have to cooperate with the police, and for communities that are under siege by the police, Black and immigrant communities, you know, it makes it very hard to go to the police and make a complaint, which you need in order to get the compensation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, many people are excluded in all kinds of ways if you're undocumented. And as we were making our case for sex workers, we were also making the case for everybody else who's excluded in all kinds of ways. You know, if you can't fill in the paperwork or, you know, have difficulty getting on the computer, you know, this, it just makes for a lot of people being excluded in other ways. So we were also, you know, making our case for all those people. And then the other piece of organizing of the whole initiative was we also had to, you know, the DA's office and the police weren't following through with the attacker, Miss R's attacker, and nothing was happening on that front. So we also had to organize, you know, for follow through on the legal case and to make sure that there would be this in that case. And that, you know, her attacker wouldn't just be go free, and that it would be brought to court.
You all spoke to this a little bit earlier, and I'm wondering if you can elaborate a little bit more about how the recently approved California Proposition 35, which is the anti-human trafficking law that was passed, play into your own organizing efforts around this campaign?
Well, Prop 35 was sold to the voters on the ballot in the name of protecting young people. What it really is a movement, a crusade to abolish prostitution. In the funding and the programming that comes with Prop 35 is further criminalization. That means more police arrests in the name of finding and rescuing victims. What happens because of that is that the young people that they're trying to protect don't end up with protection. What they end up with is more fear of the police and distrust of the police. Mm-hmm. When you also distrust the police, other authorities and authoritative bodies become distrusted too, especially for young people. You have like mandated reporters and things like that. It becomes confusing as to who's trustworthy. So all authorities become people you can't trust. And what that does is it makes it harder for victims of violence to come forward, especially if they're in the particular population that's being targeted and arrested by the police in these efforts to curb trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's really bringing about more criminalization and making out the work of organizing harder because, you know, people are facing being labeled a trafficker now. You're arrested. You know, you can be, if they can set you up and say you were a trafficker, then you can face, you know, many years in prison and being labeled a sex offender for life. So the implications of this new law are very heavy on sex workers because they also target sex workers and don't help young people like it pretended to be about helping young people,
mm-hmm.
young victims of trafficking. That's not at all the result of, you know, how it's playing out.
Mm-hmm. And do you see similar laws like the Prop 35 or exclusionary regulations in compensation programs in other states that folks are dealing with outside of California.
And we haven't heard of anybody taking on, you know, that this was the only regulation of its kind in the country, this 649.56 that we, you know, got rid of. It's the only regulation where actually sex workers were singled out, exclusion. But there are, in the other programs around the country, there are ways that they do exclude sex workers, just not specifically in writing. You know, if you're involved in any so-called criminal activity, they can exclude you on that basis. So that is the way they exclude sex workers in other states. But in this, in California, it was the only state in the country that specifically named sex workers, you know, as to be excluded based on your occupation.
What is the significance then of this campaign victory? And it was just overturned, or that regulation was, you all successfully were able to remove that regulation or those two exclusionary regulations from the victim's compensation program. So what's the significance of this campaign victory for those of us in California? And what does this mean for sex worker-led struggles in general?
Well, we did get, we won the scrapping of Regulation 649.56, which excludes sex workers from getting compensation for rape. The board, after, you know, many meetings of going to Sacramento and pressing, they did vote unanimously to remove the regulation, which we were really thrilled about. The regulation for prisoners on felony probation or parole is still on the books, and you know that organizing needs to happen to get rid of that regulation. But the fact that you know we won the removal of one regulation was really fantastic, because it opens the door for sex workers now to be able to come forward and claim compensation. That is a tremendous victory, whereas, you know, before they would be pretty automatically denied. We think it also opens the doors to other, you know, disenfranchised groups, vulnerable groups like sex workers, formerly incarcerated people and others, you know, who are majority Black and people of color, to be able to, you know, come forward and claim compensation, because it established that rape is rape, violence is violence, and you know what you do, who you are, shouldn't come into account. And it also sheds a light on ways that you know how sex workers are discriminated against. It was such a blatant example of how, because you're a criminalized person, you have criminal status, that, you know, you can be discriminated against in any way. And, you know, it showed that. And people generally were against it. And, you know, that's it's a victory for the sex worker movement, and also, you know, for all people, when we win something like that, that is so blatantly discriminatory. And we found out recently that because of the victory, that the compensation program went back and looked at some of the cases that they had refused compensation to, and they announced that they were going to grant compensation to 14 sex workers who had been previously denied. And we were really, you know, we thought that was, you know, a further victory of our campaign, that now 14 women are going to be, you know, their cases have been reopened, and they are saying, the compensation program is now saying they're going to open and look at more cases. So that, you know, that helps the sex worker movement, and also, you know, uncovers the implications of the criminalization.
And there's a certain kind of power behind being able to scrutinize and expose governmental programs who are not working in the public interest and who aren't being just and fair. And there's a really kind of cool feeling of momentum and pride and power behind, like, participating in democracy that way.
And it's chipping away at, you know, we're for decriminalization of sex work so that no one should be, you know, arrested, face deportation, imprisoned for what is, you know, consenting sex for money.
And everyone should have equal protection under the law and equal access to programs provided by our government and public monies.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this is, you know, one way that we chipped away at that criminalization and is one step forward, you know, towards decriminalization of sex work so that no one is treated as a criminal for trying to, you know, make ends meet and, you know, feed families and deal with poverty.
Right. Well, fantastic. Congratulations to both of you on this amazing victory. I know that other folks in sex worker collectives and organizations are looking to this example themselves to as a way to organize across difference in and kind of doing coalitional building in around sex worker led struggles.
Yeah, thanks. And you know, we did make a video, a YouTube video that people can look at. Sex work, if you punch in sex workers win compensation for rape on YouTube, we did a summary of the, you know, the whole thing. So you can see us at the board meetings and, you know, the various pieces of organizing that we did.
Fantastic. And is there anything else that you would want to share about the collectives or the struggle itself with our audience?
Well, there's more information about our collectives and, you know, the work we do. You go to our webpage, www.uspros.net, and see that we're a campaigning organization. And we did campaign with the Erotic Service Providers Union. It was two sex worker-led groups that led this initiative and, you know, won the victory with other people, as we said, you know, supported by a lot of other people and a working group that met and worked really hard. But you could check out our website and, you know, find out more details about the campaign and how we did it, the press releases, the photos, the documents that we did, you know, produced, and get more information about it, how it was done.
Great. And we'll have links to all those on our website as well at radioautonomia.wordpress.com.
Oh, great. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Rachel and Ms. R. Really appreciate your time and sharing your wisdom around this struggle.
Thank you.
Standing on the edge of something oh so very beautiful, knowing what we know it ain't enough to see all it. Living here on earth can sometimes feel so very heavy. A million waterfalls can make up for all it. Recognize the fool that you ain't. You're a star in space, and didn't your mama ever tell you? Hear my words, you're worth way more than they all say. So can I live? Cause I got life. Wanna build my own future. Let me live. I'm on fire.
That's not true, that's what I do. I am the truth. I'm a